Greetings, and welcome to Bear Soup. I'm your host, Ron Serratia. Ahead in this 87th episode of Bear Soup, which is brought to you by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books. Dr. Larry Mass's response to the Jeff Mann article on bears in GLR. Funny stuff from Megan Mullally of Will and Grace. A section of a new book, Smashing Stereotypes on Bears. Interview in GLT with Scott McGillivray, former editor of Beef Magazine. From the Lambda Literary site, Henry James was a seriously hot bear. And a selection on hypermasculine types in the military from Paul Rudnick. It's news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. Welcome, you're just in time for another heapin' helpin' of Bear Soup. And if you recall the Bear 101 article by Jeff Mann that I read for you here on Bear Soup a couple episodes back, here is a response from Dr. Larry Mass of New York City. And the headline is, An Overly Bullish Report on Bears. To the editor, the presence of Jeff Mann's article, Bear Culture 101 in the GLR, September-October 2010, seems reflective of how the bear subculture is ambivalently enmeshed within mainstream gay culture. At one point, having earlier affirmed that bears make the GLBT community more inclusive, Mann says he doesn't relate to the world depicted in the Advocate or Out magazine. Yet, here he is writing for a comparably gay mainstream non-bear venue, GLR. Albeit as a kind of teaching exercise about bears for the uninitiated. His mention of the Advocate as such, as producing slick article after slick article, sits awkwardly alongside his mention of former Advocate book editor Richard Labonte as a bear he admires. Similarly awkward is his reference to Judith Butler, not a name you'd expect to encounter in bear discourse. Compounding the awkwardness, what has seemed more exclusive to the bear world, an embracing of masculinity, has now extended a lot further into mainstream gay culture. Bear speak, such as woof or grr, and bear paraphernalia, caps, tats, tees, are no longer any more surprising to encounter in any mainstream gay community venue, including in The Advocate, or Out, then is a leather wristband, vest, or nipple rings. In this sense, and in view of Mann's own acknowledgement that most LGBT folks by now seem to know the basics about bears, Bear 101 seems unnecessarily didactic and rather dated. In short, it seems more persuasive and appropriate to think of bears as becoming increasingly integrated with, rather than as growing apart from, the greater gay community. It seems likely that the bear subculture, like most subcultures, will continue to be absorbed into the mainstream, perhaps to the extent of that ultimate trait of masculinity, self-effacement. In the bigger picture, the gay community has gone from being more feminist to being more masculinist. To me personally, it seems a positive development that gay men are now more inclined to explore and embrace masculinity, which seemed to me to be pathologically repressed in the pre-bear era. It also seems reasonable to me to affirm that, just as we've gained knowledge of ourselves and our world from the experience of the leather subculture that preceded and stimulated the bear movement, we can affirm bear experience and culture and appreciate the various ways it reflects and refracts our lives and values. What broader historical perspectives bears and leather folk will become part of remains to be seen. And that's a letter from Larry Mass to the Gay and Lesbian Review. And we have this, Can I Be Blunt? Megan Mullally has a message for the gays in the Girlfriend Department of Out, December 2010. Number 1. I sing, I dance, I talk in a high-pitched voice, and my life partner is a bear. In short, I'm a better gay man than you can ever hope to be. 2. When my husband says he likes my outfit, I appreciate it. When you say it, I believe it. 3. That said, I know you look great actually means you're not as fat as the last time I saw you. 4. Do you ever think it's weird that you and your boyfriend look so much alike? 5. My gaydar is better than yours. Why is that? 6. Your skin has never looked better. 7. The next time I dress like Ellen for 3 years straight, please say something. 8. I've realized that I have more body hair than you, and I'm okay with that. 9. Come over and let's reorganize my closet, this time by sleeve length. And 10. In all honesty, I really can't believe it's not butter. That's Megan Mullally, formerly of Will and Grace fame, who plays the chief on the Adult Swim comedy Children's Hospital. I came across the following description of bears in a new book called Smashing the Stereotypes. What does it mean to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender? As part of the Gallup's Guide to Modern Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Lifestyle. This is written by Jaime A. Siba. Following the selection where they're talking about stereotypes of gay men and effeminacy, there's a box that reads Extra Info. A bear is LGBT slang for a segment of the gay community that doesn't exactly fit many people's stereotypes of how gay men should look and behave. Bears tend to be big men with facial hair, and they project an image of traditional masculinity in the way they dress and carry themselves. Much more likely to be seen in jeans, boots, and a flannel shirt than the latest fashion, bears have a regular guy image that contradicts the stereotype that all gay men are somehow feminine. Bears are masculine-identified men who happen to like, usually, other masculine-identified men. Most bears are proud to call themselves gay men and to represent the gay community to the world in their own unique and furry way. And that is really quite a lovely little description there. I would amend the last sentence to read, most bears are proud to call themselves gay and bisexual men and to represent the gay and bi community to the world. And there is also a terrific photograph of a floatload of bears. Bears took part in a gay pride parade in Mexico City. And there are a whole lot of really humpy-looking, hairy guys and a whole lot of bear flags on Bigfoot. So, there you go. That's from Smashing the Stereotypes. I was quite surprised to learn that my friend Scott McGillivray had resigned, apparently, or quit from 100% Beef magazine, where he was their editor for many years. And he had also edited and been the main graphic artist behind the last phase of Bear magazine. And Scott is a great guy and a very talented guy. And I was already here that he's left Beef magazine. So following the announcement in The Last Bear Soup from Steve Harris about going all digital platform for a Bear's Life magazine, it looks like 100% Beef is also having difficulties as well. In any case, so Scott did a great interview for the Gay and Lesbian Times online. It's called In the Pit, an interview with bear legend Scott McGillivray. Scott McGillivray is the editor slash co-owner slash publisher of 100% Beef magazine, where he has been since its inception in 2002. He also volunteers his time on the board of the Lazy Bear Fund, which has raised more than $1 million for charities throughout the years. I first met Scott when we worked together at Brush Creek Media, where he was the editor of the original Bear magazine from 1997 to 2002. With many questions concerning identity and image surrounding the bear community, it seemed fitting to talk to the man who is an expert on anything and everything bear. Question. The motto of the original Bear magazine was, "Masculinity without the trappings." How do you interpret that phrase? Scott says, "As editor of the original Bear magazine for several years, I was always consciously respectful of the magazine's refusal to define what a bear was. So for me, the masculinity without the trappings motto, as an expression of the bear identity, afforded gay men the unique opportunity to finally celebrate masculine identities without the uncomfortable burden of a figurative stick up our ass, so to speak. Masculinity is often interpreted as hard and rigid and lacking emotion, liberation, and creativity. So that motto, for me, was to redefine masculinity in a way that said it's okay to be gay and masculine and still have fun." Question. The earlier Bear magazines featured men who ranged from tall and thin to short and stout. How has the bear image changed throughout the years? Scott. In 100% Beef, issue 45, I wrote a From the Editor page about the evolution of the bear identity. In the early days, simply wearing a beard, not trimming your body hair, and having a stomach which was more likely to hold a six-pack than resemble one that was enough to rage against the machine of the mainstream gay culture. Through the years, that initial bear identity has evolved into a subcultural smorgasbord of bear-identified themes. Right off the top of my head, I can think of so many different varieties. Daddy bears, pocket bears, big bears, chub bears, muscle bears, polar bears, grizzly bears, panda bears, black bears, leather bears, and, probably, black leather bears. There are cubs, bald belly bears, trans bears, huzz bears, cow bears, bears in flip-flops, and the whole wolf/otter/meerkat thing, which I admit I've never quite understood. Of course, we can't forget the post-bears. Guys who at one point identified with the bear thing, but who are now more likely to stand across the street from the International Bear Rendezvous host hotel, like South Park's goth kids, begrudgingly commiserating with one another on how the word goth means nothing anymore. Question. How much imagery in magazines, videos, or calendars, say, play in the perception of the bear image? Scott. These days, it seems like everybody knows what a bear looks like. And while the, if you think you're a bear, then you are, rule opens the definition to a variety of physical types, I think those early days of the original Bear magazine, and to a lesser degree, American Bear and Bulk Mail, cemented a certain physical iconography for many of what a bear looks like. Today, in videos and magazines, like my magazine, 100% Beef, we're more about celebrating the idea than establishing it, because that's already been done. Question. The bear community tends to welcome most individuals to their events, including twinks and women. Is there a danger of the bear community losing its identity by attempting to be all-inclusive? Scott. There is an inherent conflict in the current code of if you think you're a bear, then you're a bear, because lots of folks want to be bears, and the code says that everybody is welcome at the clubhouse. The piss on this friendly, all-inclusive bowl of cornflakes is that if you think you're a bear, but you don't look, dress, groom, or act like some folks think a bear should, they'll morph from bears into catty bitches. And they'll uninvite you from participating in their reindeer games. I have a buddy who once compared this scenario to the Emperor's New Clothes. He said, "For those of us who don't really fit the look, we love that 'you're a bear as long as you think you are' slogan, and as long as everybody around you goes along with it, things are great. But there is always that one bitter bear who stands up and shouts, 'Hey, what's she doing here? She's not a bear at all.' Aside from confusing you through his use of feminine pronouns, he makes you feel like you don't belong all over again. Question. Lately, there have been editorials and articles written concerning the unhealthy lifestyle of some men who identify as bear. Is there a way to embrace one's bearishness while staying healthy? Scott. Should people's health be a priority? Yes. Is obesity in our society an epidemic? Yes. Is celebration of bear identities responsible for the fattening of America? No. Do we encourage unhealthy lifestyles by celebrating husky bodies? I can't answer that, because I like to think of it another way. We see beauty in areas where mainstream gay culture never did before. When I can take photos of a man who, for the most of his life, was ashamed to walk shirtless on the beach because people pointed at his hairy back or chuckled at his roundish, hairy gut, and feature him on the cover and in a photo spread of magazine that actually celebrates his masculine, non-traditional beauty. That's a good thing. Making people feel good about themselves, whatever their size or shape, is a really good thing. The bear community is about acceptance. So it saddens me when I hear people barking in bitter, divisive tones about how this group or that subset has ruined, polluted, or otherwise compromised the strength or focus of our community. I saw online recently where some misguided, wordy malcontent had ranted in print about how awful life is since the bear community fattened up with the acceptance and celebration of bigger and chubbier, over-gym-toned, more athletic guys. Hogwash. If you ask me, what's really gotten fat in the bear community are the egos and attitudes of a few self-righteous, self-congratulatory folks who have appointed themselves as the voice of the community and who presume to speak for the rest of us. Question. How do you see the future of the bear community? Scott. The community continues to grow and evolve. I think we're at a point in our development where people are really starting to look at this whole thing more closely, partially in retrospect, but also for the future. Folks are trying to understand what it's all about, which might help to move it forward and into the future. Certainly, lots of people are trying to make money from it. For me, the core of the bear identity has always been based in sexuality. What is it about bears that we think is hot? What do bears have that is unique to us? Why do we find each other attractive? For me, the bear identity has never been about lifestyle, recipes, or decorating, or fashion, or electronic stuff. None of those things are unique to bears. What bears have in common is sex, desire, and an attraction for other masculine-identified, burly, bearded, like-minded men. As long as men have these desires and urges, there will be a bear community of some form. But that's just me. There are those who disagree with me, and they're completely entitled to that. And this was an interview with Scott McGillivray, the former editor of 100% Beef magazine. We wish Scott all the best in his future endeavors. And we have this from the Lambda Literary site, lambdaliterary.org. Henry James was a seriously hot bear. An interview with Matthew Galloway by Antonio Gonzalez. And here's the money quote. Here's another fun, flirty question. If you could have a threesome with two other literary greats, a bookish menage a trois, who would those writers be and why? The answer? Let's say, one, Henry James, because in addition to being a great writer, he was, at least in some pics I've seen, a seriously hot gay bear. And, two, Walter Benjamin, because I love his prose and philosophy and find him, in pictures, very bookish and introspective, but somehow kind of adorable. I have no reason to think that he was gay, although, and this could be me projecting, obviously, I find something very non-heterosexual about his writing. So, Henry James was a seriously hot bear, and if you want to check out the rest of the interview, you can go to the website for a link. at bearsouppodcast.net. In honor of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, here's Don't Ask Me by Paul Rudnick from The New Yorker of last year. It opens with a quote, General Merrill A. McPeak, former Air Force Chief of Staff, on the op-ed page of The Times. I do not see how permitting open homosexuality in these communities enhances their prospects of success in battle. Indeed, I believe repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell will weaken the warrior culture at a time when we have a fight on our hands. And then the main article starts. My name is Marine Corporal Roger T., and I am one gay soldier who agrees wholeheartedly with General McPeak, although I think that he doesn't go far enough. Because my staying closeted, in fact, makes me a better soldier through what I term sublimation. For example, right before heading out into a firefight with Iraqi insurgents, I always imagine myself at the beach with Merrill A. McPeak, both of us in helmets, camouflage print, speedos, combat boots, and sunglasses. I picture myself rubbing sunblock all over the luscious, leathery hide of General McPeak, and the adrenaline rockets through my veins. By the time I leave the green zone, I'm ready to kill anything that moves, and then make savage, passionate love to its corpse. I'm at what I like to call my sensual, combat-ready McPeak. As a gay man, I naturally spend much of my time debating casting issues involving the musical theater, although thankfully I can't share such thoughts with my unit. Instead, when I spot a potential suicide bomber, I think of him as someone who insists that Tyne Daly was the greatest Mama Rose of all time, even better than Merman. This makes me so enraged. My aim grows so steady that I can pick off a bomber with a well-flung grenade, while shouting to myself, Tyne was appealing, but she didn't have a shred of Angela Lansbury's esprit or Patti LuPone's thwarted fury. Anyone who ranks Tyne over Patty deserves to die! It's called valor. General McPeak speaks movingly of unit cohesion. He says, We know, or ought to, that warriors are inspired by male bonding, by comradeship, by the knowledge that they survive only through relying on each other. To undermine cohesion is to endanger everyone. To which I say, Sing it, sister! I love male bonding more than anything, and I live for unit cohesion. Just the sound of the words makes me tingle with manly aggression. Whenever I see my unit, or anyone's unit, all I want to do is cohere. I embrace my unit with both hands, and I draw to me again and again in a vigorous, manly embrace, often until the guy on the top bunk says, Roger, calm down. That Vogue is from 2 months ago. If I were to serve openly as a homosexual, nothing would be the same. Slaughtering terrorists just wouldn't feel special. It would be like, yeah, so today I detonated a bunker filled with snipers, and then I texted my boyfriend, and I agreed that we should only use cerulean for an accent wall. Big whoop. But now, when I have to be more coded and paranoid, every time I strap on my body armor and hoist my M16, I can think, Hey, Mr. Jihad, how about a brunch date with my rocket launcher? I'm not an openly gay soldier. I'm a secret gay soldier. And that makes me fierce. I'm Project Gunway! General McPeak also notes that, to prepare warriors for a life of hardship, the military must remain a kind of adventure, apart from the civilian world and full of strange customs. It's heaven! I like to think of the military as the most exciting video game, or a sweeps week episode of Survivor, or a big butch drama club, where you get to shoot the parents and friends who don't applaud hard enough. That's why soldiers like to give one another stirring nicknames like Maverick or Big Dog or Little Miss Bazooka. Scourging the enemy is a grand adventure, like climbing Mount Everest with your buddies. And then hitting the sauna and joshing about whether someone named Merrill is really a dude you can count on. I've been so inspired by General McPeak's words that I've had a vision of a truly masculine, all-man military extravaganza. Why can't we talk to all of our enemies, maybe at the UN, and agree that from now on, war will be like the original Olympic Games, fought by only the manliest combatants in the nude? Wouldn't that be the ultimate expression of camaraderie and adventure and unit cohesion? In a nude war, I'd be proud to have my buddies' backs and their friends. I know that some people might be wondering, what place would women have in such a man's war? And my answer is that, just like openly gay males, the ladies should stay home while we defend them. For once, let's blast through all the politically correct nonsense and have a real war with platoon after platoon of hot, disciplined, gung-ho guys charging directly at the penises and scrotums of the opposing forces. I'd be proud to serve in that army and to take my place beside Merrill and the other two or three elderly fellows who still oppose allowing gays to serve openly. Naked old men with guns. Now you're talking. And that was Don't Ask Me by Paul Rudnick. This has been Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 87. Thanks to Joe of BearRadio.net, music by the Mermen, and as always to my husband Bear Rocco. And thanks to you for listening to the Bear Soup podcast. Please email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Check out the Bear Soup page on our newly refurbished home blog, www.bearsouppodcast.net. Bear Soup is produced for the Bear Radio Network, which is not responsible for the content of this podcast. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Please check out their fine titles by Bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, spelled BearBonesBooks, including the latest in the hot and hairy fiction series, Bear Lust, edited by R. Jackson. Look for Bear Soup, Bear Radio, and Bare Bones Books also on Facebook. And always remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.